This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to an episode of Tag Along. I am your host, Bilal Khan. I have here with us Haseeb Noor. We've been in this series of videos. You don't have to necessarily watch it in particular order. We're actually kind of going all over the place. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that we've already talked about in the seminar succession, the rise of Abu Bakr and Umar, I think the big picture, it's fair to say, for anybody attending, would be that they can come in and leave with an understanding and specifics on how they can implement ideals of Islam within the imperfections that an individual has,
right,
within the imperfections of oneself. So, and the way that you're presenting this class is the fact that it is a story with multiple characters, mm-hmm, the primary main characters being Abu Bakr and Umar Siddiq.
Right.
Umar Khattab and Abu Bakr Siddiq.
Right.
And it's Umar al-Faruq.
Right.
And so you have the two of them, mm-hmm, how Abu Bakr Siddiq is Muslim, Umar al-Khattab is not.
Mm-hmm.
You go into them, Umar al-Khattab becomes Muslim.
Right.
The death of the Prophet sallallahu
alaihi wasallam,
the Khilafah of Abu Bakr Siddiq, mm-hmm, his death and passing,
right,
Umar al-Khattab,
right,
and his rise to power.
Right.
And the opening of different cities and,
right,
ultimately opening of Jerusalem, right, and as well as the fall of the Persian Empire. Mm-hmm. And then that's how basically the whole thing is presented.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing that I've been wondering about is where is a lot of this information coming from, and why these sources specifically?
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I'm asking this is because when it comes to history,
right,
and you and I are very well aware about issues of historical inaccuracy, mm-hmm, right?
Right.
We're talking about history that took place, 1,300, 1,400 years ago.
Right.
And even when history is as old as, just a few hundred years ago,
right,
you don't necessarily have the original sources.
Right.
In fact, the sources that you're looking at are referencing other sources that may or may not exist anymore.
Right. Right.
So how do you deal with something like that, that is so old?
Right.
Over a millennia.
So obviously one of the most beautiful things about our faith is that our faith is preserved through a systems of checks and balances and authenticity that is, you're not going to find.
Okay.
And this is just historically as sound as it can get, because we have...
Are you talking about the sciences of hadith?
The sciences of hadith, in particular, the science of isnad in hadith.
Okay.
The chain of narration.
Okay.
So our chains of narration is a form of checks and balances that is unsurpassed in human history.
Okay.
You're going to have oral record in,
yeah,
other traditions, mm-hmm, yes, but not as sound in preserving text as you have in the Muslim tradition.
Sure.
So the primary source, obviously, is the Word of God itself,
yeah,
which is the Quran.
Yeah.
And the Quran is not a history book, yes,
yeah,
but it has history in there.
Okay.
And it's something that we have to go turn back to and make it as a primary source, even when describing, yes, the rise of Abu Bakr and radiallahu anhu, Umar and Khattab, because there are things there which discuss that.
So there's aspects of the Quran that either they were witness to in,
yes,
this revelation,
yes,
coupled with the fact that is now Abu Bakr Siddiq is mentioned in the Quran, right?
Right.
But not by name.
No.
Okay. Is Umar bin Khattab mentioned in the Quran?
There's over 30 events in the Quran,
yeah,
that was based on Umar Khattab's question or direction.
Okay. Oh, wow. Okay.
We'll talk about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know there's one issue where... Okay, well,
right. Yeah. We'll talk about that. So when that's the first primary source. Secondary source, another second primary source is,
yeah,
obviously the Sunnah itself,
okay,
Hadith. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people think that Hadith is just only the statements of the Prophet ﷺ. No, it's actually the statements of the companions which are founded in that as well.
It's understandable that, at least to my knowledge, relative speaking,
mm-hmm,
like we have so many Hadith by Abu Huraira, so many Hadith by Aisha radiallahu anha, in relation to what the number quantity that they have,
mm-hmm,
we don't have the same number in relation to Abu Bakr Siddiq and Umar Khattab, right?
I mean, for sure, Abu Bakr and Umar Khattab, no. We do,
okay,
have a lot.
Okay.
And that's why, because his reign was 10 years.
Sure.
And it was longer. As far as Abu Bakr,
no, but specific prophetic narrations from them.
Yes, there's many.
Okay.
There's actually a book that is a volume of all of the narrations of Umar al-Khattab. Interesting. In relationship to the ones you mentioned, 100%, for sure. But as far as Abu Bakr radiallahu anhu, he only lived 2 years after the passing of the Prophet.
Do they have anything like that about all the narrations by Bilal ibn Rabah?
Yeah.
They do.
It's something called Musnad Imam Ahmad. Musnad Imam Ahmad is a book called Masanid, which means that every companion in alphabetical order will have a Musnad of all of the hadith that he narrated.
So there's within Musnad Imam Ahmad.
Yes, there's one of Musnad Bilal ibn Rabah.
Interesting. I mean, the book is called Musnad Imam Ahmad.
Right.
Are we talking Imam Ahmad as in
the Imam? One of the four Imams.
Imam Ahmad bin Hanbal.
Right.
Okay.
That's why he was the Imam. Right. Imam Ahmad bin Hanbal is one of the four Imams because mainly of his
that knowledge contribution? Of
hadith. This contribution as well as his contribution to fiqh.
Interesting. Right? Okay. Is it in English?
I think they're translated. Yeah, they translated a large portion of it by Dar es Salaam.
Okay.
Right. So it's going to be, it's 30 volumes.
Oh, wow.
The largest, this is the largest collection of hadith that we have remaining in Islam to this now. There was one much bigger than that.
Did this happen to be amongst those collections that was distributed via the printing press that was established in Egypt from Napoleon?
I'm not aware.
Okay.
I'm not aware. But I can look into that.
Because there's a lot of our books that we use today that have a lot of precedence. They have precedence because of the distribution that came about as a result of the implementation of the printing press in Egypt.
Awesome.
So, I gotta check that
out.
So
you can tell me about this after. We're going to check this out. Look into it. Is Musnad Imam Ahmad part of it or not?
But yeah.
It's still transmitted and read cover to cover.
Okay.
To this
what do you mean translated and read?
Transmitted and read. Because as you know, look, from the sciences of Islam is hadith transmission and the study of the oral understanding. The oral transmission as well as its understanding.
Okay.
So our understanding of hadith is not just, hey, me and you sit down, open Bukhari, what do you think?
So we're talking about the understanding as in having whoever's learning it is also able to do a sharh of it.
Yes, and it's still done that way to this day.
Sharh meaning
explanation.
Expanding of it.
Expanding.
Yes.
Right. From inshirah or shirah.
Yeah. Rabbi shrahli sadri.
Right. Yeah. So expanding it, meaning giving the detailed understanding of what this actually entails.
Okay.
So that's one. That's two, right? Then we have the statements of the companions themselves, which have also been recorded in the same way as the statements of the Prophet.
Now, the statements of the companions, do they have a category in academics? Because we know one is called hadith. That's the statements of the Prophet recorded by the companions.
Right.
But then there's statements that the companions said.
Right.
Not in relation to the Rasulullah.
Right.
Okay.
Those two have two terminologies.
Okay.
Athar Umar, Athar Abu Bakr,
okay.
Or Mawquf, the riwayat Mawquf.
Okay.
Which means that it is...
What do these two words mean and how are they different?
Athar is narration. So you have the narrations which have been compiled of these companions.
Sure.
The narrations of Ali, the narrations of Aisha radiallahu anhum jami'an. And then you have mawquf. Mawquf in the terminology of sciences of hadith means that it is something that does not reach the Prophet or it is the statement of the companion itself.
Okay. When you say it does not reach the Prophet, meaning it might be talking about him, but it's not that it is referencing what he said.
Exactly.
Okay, like describing the Prophet.
Right. So that's still considered sunnah because it's about the Prophet.
Okay.
So this will be a narration of a ruling, for example.
Okay.
It will say like Ibn Abbas said.
So it's the opinion of a companion.
More or less, yes. But it can be description, it can be news, it can be history, it can be any
many things, specific to Islamic religious ruling scholarship. Not narrow to that.
Not necessarily. It can be spirituality. And it does not, is not attributed to the Prophet ﷺ as his statement.
Okay.
So it's called mawquf.
Okay.
That's how detailed Islamic science of hadith is, right?
Gotcha.
So what I mean by that is that we still read...
And you still apply the same science of isnad and the science of hadith
on these three types of literature, right?
Okay.
Quran, obviously.
Right.
We have narrated modes of transmission to this day from the person who's memorized the Quran all the way to the Prophet ﷺ, to Jibreel, the Archangel Gabriel, to God himself.
Right.
Like Allah said this.
Okay.
That's what the chain of narration
is. And there's authenticity to that because of the witnesses that were there when the compilation. You talk about the compilation of the Quran too, right?
Yes. So we're going to discuss that, inshallah.
Like both compilations.
Both compilations. One that was, you know, at the onset of Abu Bakr Siddiq time.
And but the second one was at the time of
Uthman.
But
Umar radiallahu anhu had a part in play as well.
Because
he created a council.
Okay.
And that's...
And that council was created before he died.
Right.
Obviously.
But one of the
from the grave.
One of the
by
one,
the way.
Right.
We need
we don't believe in that. Bial is just going off on. So one of the things that's more powerful about Umar radiallahu anhu is he established what's called Dawaween.
Okay.
The actual councils and like the formation of the state.
Okay. Like committees.
Committees.
Okay.
That's very good. So not also ministries is a good word.
Gotcha.
So
but ministry sounds so much more like church based. And religious
no, well, I don't mean ministry. Ministry as church. I mean ministry like the, like department in like the minister of,
like the Department of Agriculture.
Yeah, we call them department. You're such an American guy. Dude.
I'm sorry.
They call them ministers in Europe, like the minister.
Oh right, the minister of agriculture.
Right, right.
I get it.
Like
I
the
get
Ministry
it
of Interior.
The Prime Minister.
The Prime Minister.
Okay, I got you. Okay.
You guys.
Yeah, totally. I'm sorry, man. My worldview is so limited.
I'm just joking. All right, yeah. So basically, we have those three. Then we have historical count.
Okay.
And historical count now is where we're starting to get. We have to start discernment.
Okay.
The reason why is because historical account may not necessarily have chain of transmission.
Sure.
So you have many, many great scholars in Orthodox Sunni in Islam, which will collect massive amounts of historical accounts.
Okay.
And from those historical accounts are people who sometimes lied.
Sure.
But their role as a historian wasn't to start discernment and reject people's accounts and those books.
Their role was to simply collect
compendiums of history.
Whether or not the statements were true.
Regardless, yes.
So the fact is somebody at some point stated it.
Yes.
Somebody else's job at now to verify.
Right. And the interesting thing is they will also, those same historians will have other works which discuss the verification process.
Okay.
So the funny thing is that you will sometimes see, for example, Tariq al-Tabari is a historical book that we have to respect.
Right.
Right. It's by the great Imam and Mufassir.
Yeah.
You know, Imam al-Tabari, rahimahullah.
Except my I don't know if it's appropriate to say this, but I was duly disappointed when he covers the history of Andalusia.
Right.
And literally two lines. Right?
Yeah.
He is like, you have this guy, Abdurrahman bin Muawiyah.
Right.
He came, he conquered, and his descendants rule till today.
Right.
I'm like, you don't need to be a historian to know that.
Right. And you see the strengths and weaknesses even within that history.
Yeah.
So you see, for example, Tabari is very strong in the early, early Islam.
Yeah.
But later on, it's
but he's
like,
also, he was also himself geographically.
Right. Limited.
Not even, like the strength of his history, like the Abbasid history.
Right.
A lot of it is from him.
Right.
Right. And it makes sense because he was in that region.
Exactly.
Whereas he wasn't in
Andalus. Which shows you how, actually, it's almost like a praise. Maybe you don't like it because you like Spanish, but it's a praise because it shows his scholastic honesty.
Right. But I think it would be interesting. It's like, look, I don't know much about this.
They wouldn't write that. They're not going to write it that way. They just say, this is what we know. And remember, there's also another thing.
Yeah.
Remember that there was a rivalship between Spain and
of course. Well, Spain, Qayrawan, and Damascus.
So there is an element of that to play as well.
Sure.
You don't want to cause, you know, when you're writing and glorifying the Spanish in Iraq, that's not a good idea.
Right.
So you have Tariq al-Tabari, you have Tariq ibn Kathir.
Imagine Russian history versus American history.
Right. The revisionist history series, for example, like Malcolm Gladwell, talks about a lot of this, of how our perceptions of history is based on who tells us what it is.
Right, exactly.
And we're going to talk about that, inshallah. So you guys got to check it out.
That'll be interesting.
That'll be the first part. A lot of what we're discussing, we're going to go into much detail, inshallah, in the class as the first part.
Okay.
So that you understand where we're coming from.
Sure.
We're coming from a tradition. So a lot of people will not tell you, like, this is where my bias is.
Okay.
We're going to tell you where our biases are.
Yeah.
We're Muslim.
Because and our bias is based on the sources that we're looking at.
And that's what we're going to be very honest about.
Right.
I'll give you an example.
But we can also back up our reason for, like,
of
this
course.
Is why we're leaning towards this, because of our objective goal.
Exactly.
Okay.
The authenticity we've reached based on, the subjective goal we've reached based on the authenticity that we have.
Yeah.
So when there is no authenticity, we're not going to see me deriving rulings from it. You're not going to see me deriving, you know, kind of necessarily guidance from it, but rather telling the story and saying this is what has been mentioned in history books.
Right.
So, for example, the glorification of Jerusalem
wasn't
so glorious in the sense that the Christians were just, they were like opening, throwing flowers. No, and it wasn't necessarily like that.
We
talked about that.
Yeah.
And so the historical.
I mean, it's even similar to like when Muslims first came to Spain.
Right.
Right. Like there was a lot of injustice that happened there too, where they took more than they were owed.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And as it was a decade later,
right,
where one of the Spanish governors took a lot of the land away from
and
gave it back to the Christians.
Right. Well, that didn't happen even in the time of Umar al-Khattab. There was much more justice than that, but that's okay. A very good example. But I meant like that they weren't celebrating like open arms.
Right.
They celebrated the justice.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? There's difference between throwing flowers and saying, hey, he's not that bad.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Right? It's like, okay, we won't revolt.
Right. Exactly. That's exactly what happened. They lived in peace all the way till when? Till 1908.
1908.
Yeah, that's the Ottoman Empire when it fell in the British.
Okay.
So the
Muslim... Wait, was it 1908 or 19... But what about Salahuddin and that whole period?
Yeah, I mean, I'm talking about that legacy lived on amongst the Muslims who took over. So obviously it fell in Crusades happened
for 700 years. So since the opening of Jerusalem via Umar al-Khattab...
Right.
Until from that point, moment after Jerusalem was taken back,
The Muslims
the
established
same
that
justice was
that
applied.
Legacy of Umar, which in reality is the legacy of the Prophet Sallallahu Alaihi
Wasallam. Right.
But we say the
which
legacy
was
of Umar.
The legacy of the Prophet is because Umar al-Khattab is implementing what Prophet Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam did when he came to Mecca.
And that's why he's his successor.
Okay.
Right. So historical accounts, like we said before, we're going to talk about the standard of discernment.
Yeah.
And then we're going to talk about, obviously, Western academic historical criticism.
Sure.
And
criticism of what?
When you hear the term Western historical criticism, it doesn't necessarily mean criticism.
Okay.
It just means analysis or...
Well, critique.
Critique of it.
Of what though?
Of early Islamic literature and tradition.
Okay, so the Western perspective of these... Yes. Narrations, the hadith, and how they look upon.
Yes.
Okay.
So,
what's interesting is Roger Collins, which is one of the historians that that I was looking at.
Right.
He actually praises the science of hadith that goes into preserving that.
So you're gonna have people who praise and some people who just
reject. But he also his criticism is that the same science and rigor is not applied to Spanish history.
In Spanish history.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So for that reason, he's like, there's only so much that he can say. This is actually happened.
Right.
And then anything beyond that is there is, and then he goes through the criticisms of what.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
You know what it is? He is actually Muslim in regards to that critique.
Okay.
We believe the same thing. So when we talk about criticism, the criticism that is that is based on the narrations of the Prophet Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam is nowhere near to the criticism we have or the level or the staunchness we have when it comes to historical account.
Yeah.
And this is something a lot of, I'm talking about recent history where people have kind of not understood, where they say, why don't we apply the same rigor or the same model and standard as hadith onto the history? And guess what?
Because you can't.
You can't. And by the way, it's against our tradition to do that.
It is?
Yes.
Why is it against our tradition to apply to history?
Imam Ahmad, rahimahullah, said that when it came to narrations of tafsir and historical account and siyar, which is the Maghazi of the Prophet in the details, we became less stringent in our in acceptance.
Okay.
And when it came to ahkam, rulings, we became more.
Well, I can understand in terms of embracing the fact that okay, these are here, but we can't take action on these. We can't apply rulings on these.
You can take general benefits,
right? You can take benefits, but the thing is, even with history, like a big part of history, in my opinion, like we're talking about, like because a lot of that history is economic history, governing history, political history, case law, But like, if you can't trust the case law that was recorded back in the day, then.
But that's why there is very little of what you described in detail. Very little in the sense of case law that we cannot go through the discernment of asanid.
Okay.
Do you understand?
Yeah.
For example, there's a book called The Aqdiya of the Sahaba, the judicial rulings of the companions.
Okay.
And this is mainly the Khulafa.
Yeah.
So there's the volume on Ali is thick.
Okay.
Why? Because he was such a, I mean, in his case, he was
a judge. He dealt with a lot of stuff.
Exactly.
Right? So we have to make rulings.
Right. And all those rulings have chains of narration to them, so we have that level of discernment.
Yeah.
But when it came to, for example, Umar al-Khattab, you know, there's a lot we have.
Yeah.
But there's not going to be like cases, dawaween, like collections.
Collection of
Of law or court, you know, collections.
Is it that because they didn't have that much, I would assume the necessity... It would necessitate, because of Ali ibn Abi Talib's times, that they needed to have some sort of transcription, codification, recording, protection, because of the times they lived in.
Yeah, I mean, there's a number of...
I mean, just like you have like the creation and the codification of laws at the time of post-colonialism,
right?
Right? Like, such strong codification to protect it from the colonial influence.
Right.
But you don't have that same level.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, I mean, historically, there's so many reasons why a lot of this record does not exist. I mean, it doesn't exist in Persians, it doesn't exist in Muslim Romans. Historical record is something that whatever we find, we can kind of base it on, right? Yeah. But the beautiful thing is those, we have such detailed historical record to these four khulafa that we can even get a general idea of what their society was like.
Okay.
Based on how much we have narrated based on chain.
Okay.
But as far as like, hey, the... For example, what you call a kutab of qada, which is the scribes of a court case.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, you're not going to see that too much, even though it existed.
Yeah.
There's details of even Umar's statements how they should run it.
Just like the court...
The court, the typewriter lady, her guy or whatever. Yeah, yeah. Right? So they had it for sure.
Yeah.
But how much did that survive? They didn't survive with chains of narration.
Okay.
So it just kind of maybe lost relevance, maybe destroyed and ransacking of Baghdad or all of this.
Right.
So there's a lot that.
I mean, that's the other question I always have. Like in these sackings of cities,
right?
What did we lose?
A lot, man. We lost so much. I mean, in the sense that a professor in Georgetown, he said something very beautiful to me. He said that, you know, it's actually a physical miracle. The amount of stuff we have lost, but none of it means that we have lost our tradition. In fact, it was copied in other works.
Okay.
So when you think about it, if a million copies was destroyed in the library of Baghdad, you would think that this destroys civilization. You know, we're talking about now things are being destroyed and archaeology is being destroyed. But imagine so much gets destroyed and ransacked, but a tradition still lives on. This is definitely divine. For example, when we talk about Muslim Imam Ahmad, how it's the biggest collection of hadith, there's something bigger than that existed. By a Spaniard, Andalusian scholar by the name of Baqi ibn Makhlad, who traveled by foot from Spain to see Imam Ahmad.
Oh wow! Okay,
in Iraq, and he
what year? What century?
This is the third century.
So around
third century.
So the third century in 200
Hijri.
Okay.
So this is 200. 60, 70, 80.
Okay.
Okay. So Baqi ibn Makhlad came from Spain.
Okay.
And Imam Ahmad met him, he was actually...
So we're talking about the 9th, 10th century Gregorian.
Around there.
Okay.
So when he met Imam Ahmad, he was actually under house arrest at that time.
Oh, by the government?
So he basically...
And Imam Ahmad lived where?
He lived in Baghdad.
Iraq.
In Kufa, in general Iraq.
Well, today is Iraq. It wasn't back then.
Right. So... when he would visit him, he said that I can't teach you. He's like, do you know where I came from? He's like, a land beyond Al-Maghrib, Morocco. Right. He's like, there's land beyond that Muslims live in.
Yeah.
Like in an amazement. Yeah. He's like, of course, yeah. And then basically said, okay, come every day and ask me as if you're pretend to be a beggar.
Oh.
And when I open the door, I'll give you a hadith.
Okay.
And he would do this constantly going back and forth.
Okay.
So finally he collected, you know, the hadith of Imam Ahmad, but he was somebody that traveled so extensively that his collection was bigger than the collection of Imam Ahmad.
Okay.
Guess where that is? We don't know. It's lost. But check this out. Being the skeptic that I was, I said, if we have that many a hadith collection that was lost.
Right.
Then how many hadith did we lose?
Right.
Of the prophets, I said.
Okay.
Well, the beautiful thing is that man, we know every single scholar that he collected from.
Okay.
Okay. This is hadith sciences.
Yeah.
Ilm al-Rijal. The sciences of knowing the men and narrative.
So essentially, whatever he collected, it might have been lost. There was already somebody else who collected it.
It's already known.
So there's redundancies.
Exactly.
Because of the science.
Exactly.
There's redundancies in place.
For example, the redundancy of Muslim Imam Ahmad.
Yeah.
It has all of the Muwatta, the collection of Imam Malik, already in it.
Right.
And it has Bukhari in it, and it has Muslim like Abu Dawud and etc.
Okay.
The collections that
the science is if for whatever reason we lose Sahih Bukhari, right? We could leverage the sciences again to rebuild it.
Right, and also the fact that there's people who memorize Sahih al-Bukhari cover to cover.
Right, no, that's what I'm saying. Because,
right.
because we have that chain that goes...
Exactly.
And
exactly.
Okay.
And because remember, Imam Ahmad memorized
a million... So you can literally burn all the books and we could rebuild
it. We could rebuild it.
Okay.
Right.
And that in itself is...
Is divine.
Is, I was going to say astonishing.
Astonishing, yeah. But that shows you, you know, this is a tradition which was preserved. And Allah said that in the Quran.
So, I think the last
historical accounts.
The last thing I want to hit upon is because, you know, in terms of the sources and why you chose the sources, specifically in regards to the Roman history, the changing of hands of Jerusalem mm-hmm. between Rome and Persia, right. as well as the perspective of the opening of Jerusalem from the Romans.
Right.
And what was also taking place? Like, what do you look at there?
Well, there, obviously, because we don't, Muslims focus on Muslim history for the most part, and you have Roman who obviously speak Roman history. So we always have to look at the scholars for each of these different types of empires. I looked at a lot of Western, obviously, sources for even, by the way, early Islamic history. For example, William Kagi is a scholar mm-hmm. on Byzantine Roman history.
Sure.
So I focused a lot of his works when it came to Heraclius and who's the Roman ruler.
And the thing I'm curious about is what was the relationship of Heraclius? Yeah. Was he the emperor?
Yes.
He was the Byzantine emperor like Caesar, but not...
Right, because the Roman empires, you know, had split.
Yeah, they had split.
Before.
Okay.
And he is one of the most interesting characters, for me personally, in history.
Okay.
Because he lived during the time of the Prophet, sallallahu alaihi
wasallam. Okay.
And he lived throughout the entire of the Khulafa.
Right.
So this man, the more you know about him, it actually has a lot of influence in what you know about Umar's life. We're going to talk about him in great detail.
Okay. And so you were looking at Heracles as a character.
You're right.
Okay. Who else from that region? Maybe from Persia?
Well, Persia, I didn't really do it that much. Because
it'd be interesting to see the perspective of the Muslim.
I didn't find too much from the perspective of Cicero's,
okay.
for example. Because to be honest with you, Heracles, and again, this has a lot to do with being Roman.
Yeah.
And there is the perspective of history we have, oftentimes in English in particular, and European languages, will always kind of over-focus on Rome and Greek.
Okay.
Right? So for you to get the Persian perspective, you have to go deep into Fantasy and the
Persian languages.
The Persian compendiums of history, which I know Fantasy,
being Afghan.
Right, yeah, but I don't have academic Fantasy for me to have read all
right,
of that.
Right, right.
So eventually I would love to do that, inshallah, but I didn't really focus too much from the perspective of Cicero's, only because he didn't really play that much of a role as Heracles did. The Prophet ﷺ has sent him a personal letter, which has been preserved in our text.
Yeah.
So we're going to talk about
it. And that's where the whole Aslam Taslam comes from.
Yeah, Islam Taslam.
Yeah. Yeah. And so now for anybody, and one of the things that used to be in the Al-Maghrib seminar tradition,
right.
back when we used to have double weekends,
right.
Is there was always a recommendation for people to start reading mm-hmm. specific books,
right.
Or not just books, but even other seminars too, in preparation if they wanted to the class. And then at the same time, there would be other book recommendations to continue one's education and learning beyond that particular class.
Okay.
So for this,
right.
The Rise of Abu Bakr and Umar,
radiallahu
anhu, do you have 1, 2, or 10?
Yeah, I do. Everybody will get a list of them, inshallah, maybe we can post it even. But one of the things I really recommend people to learn is the life of the Prophet himself.
Okay.
Because you will see the roles of Abu Bakr and Umar.
So a good prequel, essentially, is go through Seerah.
Go through Seerah. Take the Al-Maghrib class by Sheikh Abdul Bari and Sheikh Kamal Makki. And listen to, for example, The Sealed Nectar. There's the book called Revelation. There's a book called Martin Lings.
I don't like The Sealed Nectar.
I mean, yeah, and look, the Arabic is amazing.
Okay.
But the English translation is a little bit hard to go through.
It's so bumpy.
There's a new one. They've revived the English.
Okay.
It's the one with the red cover, and it has a lot of diagrams inside.
Okay.
So that one I found actually to be much, much better.
Okay.
Because they fixed some of the English idiosyncrasies. And
sure.
Like that.
So you have The Sealed Nectar, the new version.
Yeah. Martin Lings, for example.
Martin Lings. Okay.
And then you have Revelation by
Milan. Oh, the new one.
Yeah.
Right?
I liked it a lot. And again, with all of these books, there's always going to be something where there's going to be scholarly discussion with regards to some of the facts, some of the issues, etc.
Okay.
But again, generally, we're looking at the general things.
Okay. What about Sheikh Yasser's?
Oh, of course, yeah. Sheikh Yasser. Sheikh Yasser Khalid.
Well, if you have it's in podcast form also, right? So if you have.
I definitely encourage, if you really want to, like,
100 episodes,
yeah,
about that. What, an hour to 90 minutes each.
Right.
So if you're talking about, 5 days a week,
right?
That's a lot. You could probably finish it inside a year.
Inshallah.
Yeah, if you were really that.
Sheikh Abdel Nasser Jangda also has a podcast.
He does. But he has a very
different take.
His take is from a perspective of family and community.
And spirituality. And kind of like a very personal touch.
And a lot of Dallas Mavericks references.
But that's why I love, look, for me, when you hear history from a different perspective,
yeah,
I actually love to hear the same story from different people.
Yeah. I mean, different lenses, right? Sheikh Yasser presents it from a very academic lens.
Right.
Sheikh Abdel Nasser presents it from his strengths based. Right. I mean, that's a lot of seerah, and I can understand.
Right, most of it's seerah. There's a lot of books on the lives of these four khulafa.
Yeah.
One of the ones that I recommend really a lot is just because it's so in-depth is Dr. Salabi's works.
Okay. Is that in English?
In English, IIPH Publications.
Okay.
The ones who kind of, so it's called The Life and Times of Abu Bakr, The Life and Times of Umar, The Life and Times of Uthman, The Life and Times of Ali radiallahu anhu. And he keeps going. In Arabic, it's all of his Islamic history.
Okay.
I think they've translated now Salah ad-Din. They're going to translate to Hassan and Hussein.
Okay, so he kind of did an entire body of work around these folks.
And this scholar that's alive, he's one of my teachers, and you know, I got a chance to study.
So what, is he a historian?
He's a Libyan historian who lived in Medina, and then you know, he lives in Libya now, I think.
Wow, okay, and they're still in the process of converting it to English?
Yeah, because it's just so big, mashallah.
Okay.
So, yeah, IIPH publications.
What's his latest piece in Arabic? Assuming he's continuing.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
He's actually started to focus on concepts now. So one of the things he did is Iman through the Quran.
Okay.
So the six pillars of Iman.
But in terms of the individuals that he's covered historically, who was the last?
Salah ad-Din. The last one he did is Sheikh Badis, the Algerian scholar and one who basically went against colonialism.
Oh, okay. So, well, are we talking like around the time of Mukhtar and the Libyan revolution?
The most recent, yeah. Okay. It's around that. So Sheikh Badis played a huge role.
Okay. And what's the last one that was translated to English?
I actually haven't kept up because most of it I go through in Arabic. But
you just go through it in Arabic?
Yeah. I mean,
okay.
And obviously it's much better. Learn Arabic, guys.
I mean, anything in its original core, in its original form,
right,
will always be.
And then what
better.
I do is I also go to Western sources because I actually like the amount of research that they do.
Yeah.
But then you generally want to stay away from their conclusions. I mean.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think that's the thing, that having the ability, and I don't think it's that hard.
No, it's not.
To decipher between the historian and author's personal opinions.
Exactly.
And what the research they presented.
Right, right.
Right? Because at the end of the day, you can think for yourself.
Exactly. Yeah.
Right? I mean,
that's what I think this class will kind of go into, really.
Okay.
And for you to understand our narrative.
Yeah.
When we look at any kind of historical information.
Yeah.
So when we come to, for example, really big schisms in theology, for example.
Schisms?
Like
like the splits.
Yeah, yeah. Splits. And okay. For example, the Sunni Shia, for example, understanding how do we understand it and in relation to the status of the Sahaba.
Sure.
You're going to need that.
Okay.
And I think when we have those discussions, we'll see how open we should, you know, we should be in having those kind of discussions and welcome it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool, man. Guys, thanks for joining. This might have been a little bit of a longer episode. It's about 33 minutes in this. Yeah.
So that was when he starts talking history.
So we'll see how much we can bring this down. Probably right. Split it up. Or maybe not. Just enjoy.
Have a good one, guys.
All right, guys. Assalamu alaikum.